Well, hey, church, glad to see you guys here this morning. Today, Pastor Kevin is teaching at our Tiffin campus, which means you guys are stuck with me. All right, so I'll apologize right up front. Thanks, all right, didn't expect the applause. I'll take it. Here at Grace, we've been exploring an ancient document written by a Greek doctor named Luke now for a few months. And Luke was one of those guys. He lived during the time of Jesus, but he did not know Jesus personally. And so Luke, he had heard the stories, he had heard the rumors, he had heard all this stuff about this Jesus guy and all these incredible things that this Jesus guy was doing. And so what Luke decides to do is he decides to take months and months and months, if not years of his life, to investigate these claims about Jesus. And so he goes and he tracks down the eyewitnesses. He sits down with them. He has the conversations. He asks the tough questions. And once Luke has gathered all this information together, right, he compiles it all down into one orderly document. And that is the book of Luke that we all have in our Bibles. Now, at this point in the story, Jesus, he's about 32-ish years old, and he has been traveling from town to town to town and village to village at this point for about 2 years. And he's got these 12 guys that are with him the whole time, and it's good. And so he's there, he's teaching, he's helping people, he's kind of doing his thing. And wherever Jesus showed up, large crowds would gather. I mean, wherever he went. It's funny, interesting, because Mark tells us in his account of Jesus' life that when Jesus would show up, I mean, it was like, it was just crowds just got so huge that it actually started kind of working against Jesus because he couldn't go into town anymore, all right? He had to stay on the outskirts. He had to stay out in the countryside. And people from all the different towns and people from all the different surrounding villages would all come and listen to Jesus because he was saying things that no one had ever heard anybody say before. And he was doing things that no one had ever seen anybody do before. And so they all wanted to hear those things and all wanted to see the things that Jesus was doing. Last week, we talked about how it was like a turning point in Jesus's ministry. So he's going to all these towns and villages, he's doing his thing. And then last week, he changes, all right? He starts focusing on the end game. He shifts to what he's doing. We saw this in Luke chapter 9, verse 51. It says that when the days were coming to a close for him to be taken up, meaning, all right, when Jesus knows that his time is almost done, all right, because he knows he is going to die. He knows what's coming. When he knows that he is going to die, he was determined to journey to Jerusalem. Even though he knows the humiliation, even though he knows the pain, the suffering, the shame that awaited him there, he starts heading towards Jerusalem anyway. And his plan is not to just go like straight there as fast as we can, let's get this thing done. No. His plan is to take his time, and as he's generally heading in the direction of Jerusalem, he's going to stop in all the towns and all the villages that he can, and he's going to keep doing his thing as he makes his way towards Jerusalem. And so what he does is he sends out a bunch of his followers to go like get everybody ready. So they're going to town. They're like, hey, guess what? Jesus, he should be coming through here like in about a week. So you guys be ready. He is coming. He's got you guys on the map. It says he appointed 72 others and he sent them ahead of him in pairs to every town and place where he himself was about to go on his way to Jerusalem. Now, this should sound somewhat familiar to you. Okay, because we've seen him do something similar. We've seen him do something like this before. If you remember, a few weeks ago, we talked about how Jesus, he sent out the 12. Okay, you remember that? Okay, all right, good. He sends out the 12 in pairs, so six pairs, and he sends them out to all the surrounding villages and towns. He, you know, I'm guessing his thinking is like, hey, if we split up, we could cover more ground. And so he sends them out, and he gives them the same directions as what he gives these 72. He tells them, hey, I don't want you taking any money. I don't want you taking any extra clothes, no bags, no nothing like that. It's interesting because what would we call that, all right? You're going on a trip, and you're not taking anything. We'd call that irresponsible, right? Jesus calls it trusting in him. And so he tells his disciples, do not take anything with you. And then he gives them the ability to like heal people and stuff. Now, wouldn't that be awesome? Okay. Like, what'd you do? Like if today you left church and God was like, hey, I'm just letting you know, I'm giving you the ability to heal anybody. Okay. Would you be like going to Memorial Hospital and be like, let me heal some people. Like, hey, I'm going to take care of you. There you go. Oh, broken leg. Got you. All right. Moving on in the name of Jesus. Like that's what you'd be doing. And that's what these people, these 72 guys, that's what they got to do. And Jesus gave them the ability to do that. And he sends them out and then he waits. And weeks later, they all come back and they are pumped, right? They're full of stories. They got all kinds of stuff. And they're like, boss, you're not going to believe it. Like, dude, it was crazy. I was like, I went up to this lady and I like healed her. And then she was healed. And I was like, oh, in the name of Jesus, I'm going to heal you too. And I was just like dealing with all these people. It was so sweet. They have all these stories like you would when you got some good story, like telling everybody about it. And I want you to kind of picture this scene for a second. All right. So here's Jesus. Like, picture this in your mind. Here's Jesus. He's doing his thing. Right? Like wherever he went, he already had a crowd that was already there listening to him. And so there's already a crowd around him. And then the 72 people, the 72 guys, they start trickling in, right? Now, it wouldn't have happened like all at the same minute. It would have happened over a period of hours or probably over a period of a day. And so they are start trickling in and they got crazy stuff that they're telling the crowds. And the crowd's like, no way, you healed. You know, they're just talking about all this stuff. And Jesus turns to the crowd, and I'm just going to paraphrase this real quick. Jesus says to the crowd, he says, hey, it's not about your religious pedigree that matters. These ordinary 72 people, they weren't the priests. They weren't the Bible scholars. They weren't the top religious people of that day. All right, they're just average, normal people. He says, it's not about your religious pedigree that matters. What matters is your relationship with God. Now, this was completely opposite of how people in that culture viewed religion. It's just completely opposite. They viewed religion in that culture a lot like how our culture views religion. Like this is just what we think. We think, hey, the way to heaven, like, what do we got to do? Well, we got to be, like, as religious as possible, right? Like, that's kind of how we think, where it's like, well, you know, the more religious you are, probably the better chance you have of getting to heaven. That's how we all naturally think. If you follow the rules, if you are a good person, and you get baptized and read your Bible and pray a little bit, like, you are set. Like, you got to make it, all right? You will make it. All right, but here's Jesus. Think about this. Jesus comes on the scene, and he says, no, I got a secret for you. It's not about doing religious stuff. That's not what it's about. And he's completely turning upside down what everyone thought God was like. And so he says this to the crowd, and the crowd's just like, what does that mean? And then he turns specifically to his disciples that are right around him, and he basically says, hey, you have no idea the things you are seeing. Right? You have no idea the implications of what you get to do. You have no idea the implications of what you get to see. The story that you get to play a part in. My story, which is a rescue mission, all right, not just for you guys, not just for the entire crowd here, but for the entire world. And then as he's kind of having this little private conversation with his disciples, and this again, there's this huge crowd all around him, a religious leader in the crowd stands up. Luke tells us that an expert in the law stood up. Now, expert in the law, we would think naturally that this would be kind of like a lawyer, right? Like they're experts in the law. This guy wasn't necessarily a lawyer. This guy was not an expert in Roman law, which Rome owned the world, including the area of Israel, all right, during this time. No. This is the expert. He's an expert in the biblical law, so in the Old Testament law. This guy is an expert in the Bible. And so he stands up. I mean, this is a super religious guy. Most of these guys, I mean, they had books of the Bible memorized. I mean, can you imagine that? Like for me, I'll be honest with you. All right, sometimes I have a struggle memorizing verses. Like it's just not my thing. It's just not how my brain works. These guys had books of the Bible, complete books of the Bible memorized. Like I don't know when the last time you read the book of Numbers was, but like memorize it. All right, if you do that, I'm impressed and I will give you credit for that. All right, this guy has this stuff down. He is ultra religious. He knows the Bible better than you know your Bible. He knows the Bible better than I know the Bible. He has this stuff down. He has this stuff memorized. And so he stands up to test Jesus, meaning he's got a question and he wants to know the answer. And he's doing this in front of this huge crowd. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, like questions, they can wear me down a little bit, like question after question after question. Any parents out there concur? Okay, like it's just one of those things. Last night I was, me and my kids, actually over this winter, we don't do this like every night, but maybe once, maybe twice a week. We have been going through Star Wars, okay? Just kind of the movies and all that type of thing. My kids have never seen this stuff before. And I'm not like a huge Star Wars guy. So I'm kind of learning, you know, I'm watching this. I'm like, oh, okay, I think I get it now. Like that type of thing. And so we've been walking through this. We went through all the movies. There's like 9 of them now. It's crazy. And then we're kind of picking up some of the kind of the weird movies that are like in the middle of it. I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it. And so I went to one and we started watching Obi-Wan Kenobi. Okay. I don't know. Some of you guys know what that is. I feel like a total nerd even just saying that word. or words. I don't know if it's more than one. But we started watching Obi-Wan Kenobi, which turns out wasn't even a movie. It was like a show thing. So we're going through the episodes. Okay, we started that a couple weeks ago. And last night, we're watching an episode. And, dude, it's like question after question after question. Like, I can't watch. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Right? And they're like asking me questions. I'm like, oh, just focus. All right. Like, I don't know the answer to your question because I can't pay attention enough. Like, they're like getting on some like animal thing to like ride it across the desert. They're like, what's that? And I'm like, I don't know. It doesn't have a name. Like, it's just a thing. Okay. Sometimes they ask me stuff about like the plot of the story, which is something that I should know. And sometimes I don't know, and so I gotta like text Nick Hurst. You guys know Nick, all right? One of our tech guys. He's a Star Wars expert and a tech guy. Those seem to go together, okay? And so he's my nerd that I call, and it's good to have a nerd on speed dial when you need one. And Nick knows that. And so I'll text Nick, and I'm like, dude, my kids are like, I thought this guy died, and I thought he died too. Like, he got cut in half like a few movies ago, but now here he is. How do you do that? You know, like, I don't know. I don't get it. And Dick's like, I don't know, but he's back. You know, it's just, so sometimes it gets lost in translation between Nick and my kids sometimes, which is on me. But the worst, you know what the worst questions are? Answering repeated questions, right? Parents, you know this. Answering questions if you already have answered like once, twice, three times, four times. Get what I'm saying? Those are the worst. And for this question specifically, out of all the questions, I'm sure Jesus had questions all the time. Not that he had questions, but he was asked questions all the time. His disciples were constantly asking him questions. I'm sure Jesus had answered this specific question probably the most. And it's not even a bad question. All right, it's not a bad question. It's actually a really, really, really good question. It's actually the question. This guy stands up. He's a religious leader in the middle of the crowd. And he says, hey, Jesus, I got a quick question for you. What must I do to inherit eternal life? Basically, what he's asking, he said, hey, Jesus, what do I got to do to get to heaven? All right, what do I got to do? Isn't that the question that we all want answered? Like, isn't that the main foundational question? Like, think about it. If life is so short, and if you believe in a life after life, right? Like, throughout, don't you want to do whatever you can to make sure that that life after life is going to be a good one? Right? That makes sense. And heaven and hell are real, which Jesus talked about both being real a lot. Aren't you somewhat concerned about where you'll end up? Doesn't that matter? See, throughout human history, we've been trying to figure out the answer to this question. And what we have come up with, the answer that we've come up with throughout all the ages, is simply religion. Right? Oh, well, yeah, you just gotta buy into a religion. Okay, religion will answer this question. How do I get to heaven? All right, the answer is religion. We all know what religion is, right? Like, if you get down to the core of what religion is, it's just a bunch of rules of do's and don'ts that you got to do in order to somehow appease God. So we think, all right, we do a bunch of religious stuff, and someday we're going to die, which we all will in here, and God will look down at us, and he'll be like, wow, huh, and he'll kind of review your life and be like, wow, you did so much good religious stuff. You did that. Not many people did that one. That's pretty awesome, okay? Hey, I really want you on my team. Why don't you come here? Come with me. Heaven's this way. I'll show you the way. Like, that's what we think, kind of, right? Basically, like, that's the gist of it, that we think God, all right, if we do a bunch of religious stuff, that's what religion is, that God will invite us to heaven. That's what we all think. Or maybe you're sitting here today and you're like, man, I'm not into religion. Maybe you're just seeking. Like, you're just trying to figure out, like, some of this Jesus stuff. All right, that's cool. I just want to say, you should be here. This is the perfect place for you because there are answers to your questions, and this is where you're going to get those answers, 100% for sure, okay? But some people here, you might be like, man, I'm just not into religion, and I'm not sure if I buy into the whole Jesus thing yet, and you're just like, I just think you got to be a good person, all right? Well, okay, I get that, but the problem with just being a good person is who gets to define what good is? You? Are you qualified to define what good is for everybody, right? What about, is it our culture? Do we really want our culture defining what's right and wrong for us? Like, seriously. Okay, what about other cultures that disagree? If it is culture, then what about the cultures on the other side of the world that think have a complete different opinion on what's right and wrong? Which culture is right and wrong? See, every person, when we think that you just got to be a good person, the problem is we all think we get to define good, and when we get to define good, we always make it that we are in the category good, right? Convenient. That's nice. See, right off the bat, the root of the question is the same as the root of all religion. What must I do? What do I gotta do? All right, what's the plan? Just tell me my role, Jesus, and I'll do it, and I will be good. This guy wants to make sure that he's got a reserved seat in heaven someday. And Jesus does what Jesus does. He responds with a question. Actually, what Jesus starts doing, he starts messing with him a little bit. He looks at him and he says, well, okay, good question. Well, what is written in the law? You're the expert, all right? How do you read it? Basically, here's Jesus. He's like, I don't know, man. You're the expert. What do you think? What's the Bible tell you? You're so good, you got this stuff memorized. And he bounces the question back to this religious expert. And the religious expert, when he hears this, he's like, okay, well, I got this one nailed. All right, I'm glad you asked, Jesus. He says, hey, what he does is he repeats back what they were taught. It's like little Jewish kids in Sunday school. He's like, okay, well, you know, I know that you got to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. And then he adds in another thing, which shows us that this guy had listened to Jesus' teachings before, because Jesus always added this in. He always added in, and you got to love your neighbor as yourself. So you love God and you love people and you're good. So this guy goes above and beyond. He repeats the Old Testament command to love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And then he adds in the love your neighbor part just to kind of appease Jesus, because that was kind of Jesus's thing. And when Jesus hears this, I think, the Bible doesn't tell us, but I think Jesus smiles at him. And he's like, okay. All right, almost never happens. Somebody answered the question correctly. And Jesus tells him, he's like, you got it. You've answered correctly. That's Jesus speak for nailed it. Hey, did everybody hear? This guy's got it. And the whole crowd, they're all standing there. They're just like, wow, this is so good. Man, this guy is an expert. And this guy's like, I'm no expert. Well, actually, I am. Okay, I knew that one. All right, yeah. I'm good like that. And Jesus then says, yeah, do that, and you will live. Now, there's a problem with this. The only problem is, doing that is impossible. And Jesus knows it. We can't do it. There ain't nobody in this room that we love God with all of our heart, with all of our soul, with all of our strength, and with all of our mind. We don't do this. That's the whole reason, by the way, why Jesus came in the first place, because none of us in this room, including myself, none of us are good enough. You ain't good enough. I'm not good enough. Nobody is good enough. We cannot earn our way to heaven. The whole religion thinking that we can do a bunch of do's and don'ts, that we can do a bunch of good stuff, that God will look at us and say, I really want you on my team, that isn't real. That's something that we have come up with. And here's Jesus. He comes on the scene and he's like, yeah. That's not it. You're missing it. But let's think about this for a second. Let's imagine that you're awesome. Okay? Some of you guys, you got to imagine a little harder than others. I understand that. All right? But let's imagine that you're awesome, and somehow, I don't know how you do this, but let's say that somehow you pull it off. Like, let's imagine I'm awesome too, and my incredible talk here this morning, right, influences you so much that from today on, like, you walk outside these doors, that somehow you pull it off, right? That from every second of every minute, of every hour, of every day, out of every week, of every year, until you die, okay, that you love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all of your mind. Like, you are perfect from this day on. Can you imagine it? Be pretty sweet, right? It would be awesome, okay? Now, Mr. Perfect, or Mrs. Perfect, question, what are you going to do about the past? Like, what are you doing about the past? What about last night? Last week? Oh, last year. What about that? What are you going to do about that? Like, when you didn't love him with all of your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Because if you didn't love God with all of your heart, soul, strength, mind back then it ain't all. That's just logic. Like, that's just how it works. Like, if you missed out on some, okay, we understand that. But if you miss out on some, then it ain't all. Like, that's what he says. You got to love God with all of your heart, with all of your strength, with all of your mind. That's what Jesus is saying. He's saying you got to love God perfectly. And if you love your neighbor perfectly, you, man, you are good to go. You got it. Done. Any other questions? Okay. Hey, he turns to leave. Hey, we'll see you guys back here tomorrow. Same time, same place. That's awesome. But the religious guy doesn't sit down because he's not finished yet. And he feels the squeeze of what Jesus just said. He says, hey, Jesus, real quick, before we leave, I actually got a follow-up question to the last question. Can you take my one more question for me? And he's like, okay, what you got? And he says, but wanting to justify himself, he asks Jesus, he says, who is my neighbor? If loving your neighbor is the thing, which that's what you're saying, and I said that, but who is my neighbor? Now, all the Jews that are listening there within the crowd, they all understand what this is. Like, they all know the answer to this question, because in the Old Testament, the Bible told them, teaches them that your neighbor is your people, right? That's the Jewish people. And so all the Jews are like, I need to love my fellow Jews. Like, I get that. I'm done. In fact, most religious leaders, they actually narrowed that scope of view down a little bit. For them, they didn't feel like, and remember, this guy is a religious leader, so he's probably included in this. They didn't feel like that all Jews were like neighbor worthy, okay? At least not the bad ones. And we've talked about here over the last few months, you know, tax collectors kind of weave in through the story. And tax collectors, again, they were like traitors to their own country. They worked for the enemy. They cheated people, and they were just bad people. I mean, tax collectors would be a perfect example of somebody that this religious person probably thought, well, yeah, that guy doesn't count. All right, that guy's not neighbor worthy. I mean, sure, technically he's Jewish, but he's not a good Jew, so he's out. And the question is that going to be enough for Jesus? And really what this guy's asking is, what is the minimum amount of neighbor loving that I got to do in order to gain God's favor? That's what I want to know. What is the minimum amount of neighbor loving that I got to do in order to be labeled a good person? Or what is the minimum amount of neighbor loving do I got to do to get to heaven? That's what I want to know. And every single one of us in this room, we're all like good at this. All right, I'm really good at this. For me, I have several master's degrees. I have a doctorate degree, and I got those things. I was not good at like writing papers, okay, which was an issue. I wasn't good at like thinking intelligently. That's also an issue. You know what I was really, really, really good at? I was really good at doing the minimum amount of work in order to get a B. Okay, that's what I excelled at doing school. Okay, and sometimes if it was a hard class, I was like, okay, we'll notch this down to like C. C's good. I'm okay with a C. All right, that's what this guy is doing. He's, what is the minimum amount of work that I got to do in order to get it, in order to get there? And so he's saying, who's my neighbor? Who do I have to love? And this guy is assuming that he had met the minimum requirement, right? I mean, he thinks he is good. I mean, he is super religious. And I think Jesus smiles at him. And he says, I am so glad you asked. Let me tell you. And Jesus tells them a quick story that was probably his most disrupting, right? His most culturally insensitive story that he probably ever told. And it probably offended every single person in this crowd listening to Jesus. And he looks at this crowd, and he looks at everybody, and he looks at this religious guy, and he says, imagine this, right? Picture a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers. Now, everybody in that crowd would have known this path. Okay, this was well known. It had a bunch of names. Everybody knew this. There's probably a lot of people in this crowd, they have done this path before. Jerusalem sits at about 2,500 square feet above sea level. Jericho actually sits below sea level. And this was about 17-mile distance from one city to the other. And this path was known as being, you know, first of all, you're going up or you're going down, depending on which way you're going. And it was known for being rocky. It was known for being super dangerous. There was a bunch of caves. You would get mugged there. You would get robbed. You get beat. I mean, all this stuff would happen. And everybody in the story knows. And Jesus is talking about this road, and they're like, oh yeah, we know this road. We know how this goes. And I bet at this point, the religious guy, as he's standing there in front of Jesus, I bet he's thinking it. He doesn't say it out loud. All right, but I bet he's thinking, he's just like, whoa, 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 Jesus, why are we talking about that road? Why are we talking about this path? What's this have to do with anything? I asked a simple question. I'm looking for a simple answer. Who is my neighbor? Don't change the subject, Jesus. See, this is your problem, Jesus. This is what you do. You always do stuff like this. You give me a complicated answer for a simple question. Jesus, just answer the question. But he doesn't say it. And everybody in the crowd is paying attention because they know that Jesus is going somewhere. They just have no idea where he's going. And so Jesus keeps going. He says, they stripped him, they took his clothes, and they beat him up, and they fled, leaving him half dead in the middle of the road. So this Jewish guy is dying. And so everybody's just like, oh man, that's messed up. But that happens. He says, but by chance, a priest happened to be going down that road. Now, a priest, all right, a priest was a super religious guy, obviously, we know that. The priests, these guys were like the top religious leaders in the entire nation. In fact, their whole job was to point the nation of Israel back to God constantly. Like, if anybody knows what neighbor loving looks like, you know, it's going to be this guy. This guy is a priest. And so this guy goes, he sees the guy dying in the road, and then he decides, I'm not going to deal with this guy. And he passes by on the other side. And this is a skinny path. He probably has to step over the guy to get over him. And everybody's just like, didn't expect that. Okay. All right. Where's Jesus going with this? And then Jesus says, also in the same way, by chance, lucky for this guy, a Levite, all right, shows up. Now, a Levite, this guy is also a religious guy. Think of this guy as like the JV priest, okay? He was like the JV priest, except for he'll never get on varsity. Remember that guy? Okay? But he plays the game, and you respect him for it? Yeah, that guy. That's this guy, all right? He's a Levite. He's a JV priest. He's not priest level, but he's pretty good. He's better than the average person. And Jesus says, and he, when he arrived at the place, he also saw this guy dying in the middle of the road, and he passed by too on the other side. So both of these guys, both of these religious guys, they both pass by and both of them refuse to help. And so everybody in the crowd, they all recognize what Jesus is saying here. I mean, Jesus, he's saying that they're not getting into heaven. And this is something that's just kind of, it's just very, very, very difficult for them to understand, because they're like, but they're so religious. They've done a bunch of good stuff. Doesn't their good outweigh this bad? Like, don't you think that's how it goes? And remember, Jesus is talking to a religious guy. The guy that he's talking to is probably a Levite, at least. And there's tension. You've been there, right? When there's just tension throughout a group and no one wants to say anything and it's just so, so awkward. And this story makes everybody feel that tension, and the crowd is silent. And then the story takes a turn for the worse, because it gets crazy. Jesus, he starts shaking things up. He starts messing with their tradition. He starts messing with their thinking. He says, but then a Samaritan on his journey came up to him. Now, at this point, the crowd, there's probably an audible gasp. They're like, that's not good. Oh no, this is terrible. This Jewish guy, like this Samaritan is going to finish this Jewish guy off. Like this is not good. Remember, you guys, I think, talked about last week how the Samaritans and Jewish people hated each other. Remember that, Pastor Kevin? Okay, all right. And so they hated each other. And they hated each other for a long time. Like only like 1,000 years, okay? Pretty big deal. And so these guys hated each other. The Jewish people viewed Samaritans like half-breeds. They were like half Jewish people, but half not. And the problem was, is that Samaritans lived kind of in the middle of where all the Jewish people lived, okay? So you had these three kind of regions that were north to south. You got in the north, you got this region called Galilee. You've heard of that word before. That's where the Sea of Galilee is. That's where Jesus grew up. That's where Nazareth is and all those places. So that's kind of where Jesus' home base was. That's where he did a lot of his ministry. And then you got Samaria under that, where the Samaritans lived. And then below that, you have Judea, and that's where Jerusalem is. All right, so many times the Jews, they're going back and forth, up and down. And a lot of the Jews, most times, Jews wouldn't even travel through Samaria for really two reasons. Number one, it was dangerous. All right, Samaritans would kill Jews, especially if they were traveling alone. Not only that, but it was also gross to them. It was nasty. You weren't allowed to eat the food of a Samaritan or that was prepared by a Samaritan. You can't touch anything that a Samaritan touched. Why? Because a gross Samaritan touched that. And so they didn't want anything to do with that. And so what most Jews did is they took 6 days, just like a week, that they took to pass around Samaria to get from one place to another. In fact, Jewish prayers during this period, they would ask God to not give forgiveness to Samaritans and to not give grace to Samaritans, right? It's this idea that they would pray to God on a daily basis. They'd be like, God, please forgive me. I really, really messed up, but don't forgive that guy. He's a Samaritan, God. Please don't forgive him. If you remember, just a few days before this, right, I think you guys talked about this last week. It was in chapter 9. A few days before this, Jesus and his disciples, they're walking through Samaria. Remember, they're going down from Galilee to Judea, to Jerusalem, where he's going to be killed. And he's walking through Samaria. And if you remember, the Samaritans, they don't want Jesus around. Why? because Jesus is a Jew and because Jesus is heading to Jerusalem, which is a city that they hate. And so the Samaritans, they go to Jesus and his disciples and they're like, hey, get lost. We don't want you here. You guys are a bunch of Jews. Get out of here. And James and John, these were the two of like Jesus's right-hand guys. Remember what they do? They go up to Jesus and they're like, okay, Jesus, what do you got to do? All right, let's take these guys out. I'll take them out. All right, all I'll do, Jesus, is let me pray to God that he brings fire from heaven and burns this place up. Let's burn it up, Jesus. That sounds like a really good idea. All right, let's burn up those guys. We'll burn up their wives. We'll burn up all the children. Let's burn everybody up. All right, don't you feel bad for Jesus when you hear stuff like that? Where you're just, I'm sure Jesus is like, I thought we were past this. Yeah, I only got a few months left. This is where, these are his top guys. This is what Jesus had to work with. I mean, this was a strong level of hate. I mean, just put it in comparison. Think about the person that you hate, or not, we're Christians. Think about the person that you, that's like the worst person you know. Okay, let's say it that way. Can you picture somebody? All right, some of you guys are looking at each other. All right, don't do that. Don't look at them. Think about them. All right, you're in church. Okay, that was awkward. Okay, anyway, Samaritans were worse than that. They were. They hated you. They hated the Jews. The Jews hated them. I mean, this was a big, big deal. And so the crowd, when they hear this, the crowd is just like, oh, no, this is not good. He is going to kill that Jewish guy. This is terrible. And Jesus is like, yeah, Samaritan shows up. And then Jesus adds a twist. It's a famous story. Many of you guys know this. He says, and when he saw the man dying in the road, he had compassion. And the crowd is just like, what? You got to. That would never happen. What, are you serious, Jesus? Like, this isn't realistic. And Jesus starts piling it on and on and on in the crowd. They start freaking out. Actually, Jesus gives six things that this guy does for this Jewish guy. He says, so he went over to him, right? Meaning this Samaritan goes out of his way, and then he bandaged his wounds, meaning it took his time, and then he poured olive oil and wine on the guy's wounds, and that means it would have cost him something. And then he put him on his own animal, which would have been extremely inconvenient because think about it. If the dying Jewish guy was riding on the animal, what's the Samaritan doing? Yeah, he's got to walk the rest of the way. And then he says that he also brought him to an inn. And then Jesus really rubs it in. And the Jewish people, this is like nails to a chalkboard. They're just like, oh, I cannot listen to this. And he says, and then he took care of him. And they're like, no way. That means that he touched him. Like, this is just not good. He says, and the next day, he took out 2 denarii, and the crowd's doing the math in their head. They're like, 2 denarii, that's a lot of money. It's like 2 weeks worth of hotel stay and food. He says, he gave them to the innkeeper, and he said, hey, take care of this guy, and when I come back, I'll reimburse you for whatever extra you spend. And the crowd's just like, he's coming back? No way. That would just not happen. See, the Samaritan is treating his enemy better than, let's be honest with ourselves, better than you would treat a friend. This Samaritan is treating their enemy better than I would treat a friend. And the crowd, they just are losing their minds. And the expert, he's confused, and he's just sorry that he even asked the question, okay? And what Jesus is doing here, this is so important, this is so key. So if you've been tuning out, focus back in here. What Jesus is doing is he is redefining neighbor. He's redefining it. He's changing it up. He's saying, okay, here's the deal. Neighbor is no longer about family. It's no longer about ethnicity. It's no longer about race. It's no longer about who you like. Right? Jesus, he expands the idea of neighbor. He's saying, a neighbor includes everybody in here. Real quick, turn to your neighbor, all right, and say, hey, you're my neighbor. Just do that real quick. All right, good. I see some heads shaking. You're like, oh, yeah, I am. Yep, okay. All right, that's good. It includes all of us in here. It also includes everybody out there. People who don't act like us. It includes people who don't look like us, people who don't love like us, people who don't believe like us. Get this. It includes people who don't vote like us. Like it does. People who don't like us. You know that guy at work that drives you crazy? It includes him. All right? The people in your family that you love because you have to love, all right, but you just don't like very much, it includes them. that person who used to be a good friend until that thing happened and they did this and they said that, all right, that you've been probably, you know, maybe even holding on to that bitterness for years now, sometimes even decades. You're like, man, that person just drives me crazy, all right? It includes that person, all right? It includes the person who wronged you in such a horrible, terrible way years ago. It includes that guy. It includes that lady. They, Jesus is saying, they are your neighbor. That's who you are to love. See, it's easy for all of us to love the people that we like. Like, we all got that down, okay? The people, you don't have to be a Christian to, like, figure that out, all right? We all got that down. Here's Jesus. He's elevating the standard. He's like, yeah, okay, you can do all that easy stuff. That's good. I'm all for that. But I also want you to love the people who make it hard for you to love. See, he's redefining neighbor. He's saying neighbor love has no boundaries. Neighbor love has no limits, just like God's love for us has no boundaries and limits. And Jesus looks at this religious expert, and he looks at him, and the crowd is silent, and he says, he asks him a question now. He says, which of these three do you think proved to be the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? Which guy was it? Now nobody wants to answer this question. All right, which of these three loved God with all their heart, with all of his soul, with all of his mind and strength by loving his neighbor? Which one did it? He totally puts the guy on the spot in front of the entire crowd. And again, he doesn't want to answer the question. Nobody in the crowd wants to answer this question. And this guy, he has to say something, so he mumbles. I guess the one, he can't even answer. He can't even say the word Samaritan. He's like, the one guy, the third guy, I guess. He says, the one who showed mercy to him. And Jesus says, that's right. That's the answer. Now you go and do the same. See, nobody thought this way back then. Nobody thinks this way today. Nobody lived this way. Nobody believed this way. Jesus' point is that loving God and loving people are linked together. And so if you truly love God, it shows up in your life by how you love others. And if you think about it, if we as a church, I mean, if we could just get this down, if we could just love the way that Jesus taught his followers to love, if we could love the way that Jesus commands his Jesus followers to love, if we could do that, it would just change everything. Think about it. It would change our relationships. It would change our marriages. It would change our homes. It would change our office. It would change our plant. It would change our job site. It would change our team. It would change our school. It would change our community. We would stand out. People would love us. People would like us. We just have to do it. And can I tell you something? If you do it, it will cost you. And it will not be even. And it will not be fair. And it will be extremely inconvenient. It's going to take a bunch of your time. But that is how it looks like to love God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your strength, and with all of your mind. And we'll pick up there next week in investigating the real Jesus. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words. God, this stuff is hard. None of us in this room, including myself, none of us are good at this. This has not come natural. It's extremely difficult. But God, we need your help, and we ask for your help. It's so easy to love those people that we like. What we need your help is loving the people that make it really difficult for us to love. God, help us be a church here in Northwest Ohio that is known for loving people. Not that we have to agree with everything that they do or agree with everything in their lifestyle, but God, we just pour out our love. That's what you command us to do. That's what you did for us. And God, we thank you for that. We need your help. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.